Welcome to the Sales Leadership Awakening Podcast. I'm Stephen Rosen, along with my co-host, Colleen Stanley. Welcome, Colleen.
Good to see you, Stephen. We're having a bright, sunny day here in Denver, Colorado. I hope you're having the same up there in Canada.
I wish I could say the same in Toronto, but we're still waiting for spring to come. As we always do, we try to bridge the gap between knowing what you should do and actually doing it. Today, we want to help you master the art of having difficult conversations, which we know most people will avoid. Over 50% of people avoid having difficult conversations just because they don't enjoy it.
That's correct, Stephen. And it's interesting. It's not even based on personality style. So a lot of times we think that people that could be labeled as high drivers are really comfortable having those conversations. And I know I have a lot of high drivers in sales roles, sales leadership roles, and they're not comfortable. However, here's the good news. I know that you have 5 steps, as we've talked about it, that you have coached your high driver sales managers that even in that case might be reluctant to give feedbacks. Maybe walk us through those 5 steps, because I think frameworks are really huge on knowing how to execute, bridging the knowing and doing gap.
You got it. I teach part of a course in bold sales leadership, and one of the components is being comfortable having difficult conversations, because we know if we don't have them, small fires become bigger fires, become infernos. I don't know how many coaching clients, when I sit down and talk to them and they're having a problem with a rep, I said, let's go through this and let's talk about some ways that you can do better. So the first thing that I have learned and I share is you want to prepare for the conversation. There's a direct correlation between how much you prepare and how well the conversation goes. As part of emotional intelligence, part of what you want to do, and you're the expert on this, but part of what you want to do is seek to understand, make sure your message is being heard, because sometimes people shut down when you're having that conversation or they're hearing something different. So once you've listened, then it's really about gaining agreement on what the next steps are going to be, because part of what you want to see happen is some type of change based on the conversation. One of the key things that I may do differently, and I'm not sure if you do this, Colleen, but anytime there's a plan of action required, usually the manager would write it down and send it to the rep. I actually invert that and have the rep send their plan of action to the manager, and it does a couple things. One, it crystallizes it. When you put pen to paper, it crystallizes it in your own mind. Two, it forms a much better commitment, almost like a contract that you've written than your manager has written. And the last step is really one about follow-up. Very simplified approach to running through and getting prepared, and then making sure that what you said is heard and that you basically have an agreement and a plan in place.
There's a couple of things that really resonate here. And one thing that I get on my sales managers about is we are all over our salespeople about pre-call planning, right? Getting ready for an upcoming sales meeting. And yet when we reverse that and ask managers, how much time are you spending pre-call planning? Your one-on-one coaching, especially difficult conversations, are you rehearsing the difficult conversation? You usually get a not so much. I think that's really one that I hope the listeners take hold of there. And then something else you said was quite interesting is that the rep sends back the action item. And this really aligns with what Dr. Robert Cialdini talks about in his Principles of Influence. I'm not going to have it quite correct here, but basically he teaches that when people make a commitment, they're more likely to honor it. So if the manager is the one making the commitment, and I've made that mistake, so I'm having this big light bulb, you're actually tying into a principle of influence that, hey, if I'm committing to the action, I'm saying I'm going to do this, more likely that it's going to happen. I think those are two really points that struck me today.
I take a very simplistic approach, but some of those little nuances make a big difference in outcomes. Tell me, Colleen, in your experience, what are some of the key emotional intelligence skills that a sales manager needs to develop effectively to navigate through having tough discussions with their teams, even with their boss at times that they need to be able to have difficult conversations?
Well, they actually align quite nicely with what you've described. Number one would be emotional regulation, because even with well-intended conversations, let's say you pre-call planned it quite well, but you might have a salesperson that gets a little defensive and they start lobbing excuses. Maybe they put the monkey back on your back. And so what can happen if we're not able to manage our emotions as a leader? We end up getting into those fighting for the need to be right rather than getting it right. As a mentor of mine once taught me, and I think I've shared on our podcast before, when you're stable, you're able. When you're stable, you're able to execute that framework that you just talked about. Now, you also mentioned on the listening, and I believe you said something about, can the salesperson actually hear what you're saying? So the EQ skill there is empathy. And empathy is saying what that person is thinking or feeling, even if they're not expressing it. Active listening is repeating back, but empathetic listening is a whole higher level of listening. Because to your point, if I don't maybe start the coaching conversation with, hey, listen, right now you might be thinking this, this, and this. Let's just say not putting things into your CRM. Have you ever heard that one before, Stephen?
I have to tell you that a lot of sales managers struggle, especially with actually good reps who give them the excuse that, you know, I'm doing a good job. I just don't have time.
So the empathy comments always depends on each individual conversation, but it could be saying something like, Stephen, right now you're wondering, why am I always writing about the CRM? You know, you're hitting your numbers. Why don't I go bother somebody else? Now, you might be listening today saying, well, that doesn't sound like very professional language. Empathy is saying what the other person's thinking or feeling, because to your point, if we don't, they keep fighting your advice. So that's why if you can demonstrate empathy first, even in a difficult conversation, then you can be assertive. And that's what you're talking about, laying out the plan, agreeing to the plan. Because I've seen people when they get emotionally triggered, they kind of do the okie dokie thing. I'm out of here. Let's have this conversation in 10 years. And so they don't finish your framework, plan of action.
And you get the head nodding, which is saying, I'm really not hearing you, but I'm pretending to.
Yeah, exactly. And they've got this little weird smile where they're nodding their head, but they're thinking, I ain't doing a thing you're talking about. Absolutely.
So, or I disagree, right? I think that's a really great point, and I think it augments really well because there's resistance. Sometimes the manager going in is concerned about having resistance. And once the resistance appears, then how does the manager manage their own emotions?
Yeah, exactly. So it always starts with you, because I'm the only one that can manage the trigger. But empathy, it's amazing when you really know how to use it effectively, real world empathy, it will diffuse the conversation. With that said, we've got the emotion management. I know if both you and I are stepping into a sales manager's head, here's what they're thinking sometimes about feedback. I'm going to have fallout here. Person's going to quit. It's going to affect my team dynamics. I want to be able to give feedback to a member of my team and still have a positive culture. How do you coach a manager past those fears, which can be perceived or real?
I like how you just framed it, because one of the things you just twigged a thought here that if you perceive the conversation as being difficult, it is. In terms of hiring, and I'm slowly going a little bit off track here. In terms of hiring folks, one of the things we look for managers is someone who's comfortable having difficult conversations. The whole reason why we have a framework of preparation and good listening and maybe a way to sort of close it up is because there's a natural discomfort or avoidance there. One way to mitigate risk is to be honest and open with all your reps on an ongoing basis, because then people expect you to provide that feedback. If it comes, let's say, review time, and you haven't provided that feedback throughout the year, it's going to be like a ton of bricks falling on the person. So part of that role is just having that comfort that if there's something as a manager you spot, you see, if you believe that feedback is a gift, and if you're empathetic, if you listen to what the person's saying back and you're not being defensive, one of the overriding things is, one, if you see it as a difficult conversation, guess what? It's going to be, you know, perception becomes reality. We talk about preparing to mitigate risk of team dynamics. Well, one, you want to manage these discussions one-on-one, but you don't want someone going off saying, oh my God, Colleen was really tough on me. Two, feedback is a gift. If we look at it as that, and the individual looks at it as that, I think we can mitigate some of the risks of fallout, and how we handle those conversations has a big impact on how we turn around performance or how we get people on board to where we need to go.
Exactly. Exactly. Good points.
In terms of having difficult conversations, The feedback component is critical, how we give feedback. And sometimes it's not received well, as I just said. Can you talk about some strategies that you coach your folks on to ensure that the feedback is constructive and it leads to growth or change rather than someone feeling, oh my God, I just had a ton of bricks dropped on me?
You know, one of the points I'm going to go back to is this: the presenting problem is never the real problem. We're thinking the difficult conversation, that's where the challenge is, but we can prevent that to something you said. Examine your hiring process. When you hire someone, they come into the office with two briefcases, the visible, which is the resume, and the invisible. And the invisible is often these soft skills, how they react to feedback. I would really encourage and challenge sales leaders that are listening today. Take a look at your interview guide. How many of the questions you have are vetting that candidate for when they receive feedback? Secondly, did they even apply it? Now, secondly, what I've been encouraging a lot of people to do, and I really didn't even think of this, Stephen, until this year, feedback and teaching feedback needs to be a part of the onboarding process. It could be a value. At this company, we care. And when we care, we share. Really, when you take a look at it in life, when you care about somebody, you share. But somebody keeps reacting and responding, there's a point where you go into apathy. I've shared with a lot of people that have worked for me. When I go into apathy, that's when you should be worried, because I don't care anymore. I'm not going to care enough to give you feedback. I think you can actually walk them through your five-step framework. It doesn't have to be a secret. So they know this is how we roll. There's no secret there. So I think the onboarding. Then I think one final point. It's just always important in every conversation to state your intent and to remind them, my intention in giving this feedback is this, because I know it can make your life easier. I know this isn't the person you want to show up being at work. Stating the intention, I think, is also a great way to create what the term is today, psychological safety. Those are some ideas there.
Yeah, I think those are some really solid ideas. And it also shows that you care.
Yeah.
My first ever coach, Pat, I used to say, give them the whiffle. That's in it for them. In many cases, we're giving feedback or we're having that conversation to help the person be perceived better, to have better performance. Part of it is you're not doing it to make yourself better, feel better. Maybe it does indirectly because it's off your chest, but also to help the individual. And I think part of what that success component is, what's your intent going in? Everyone knows that they should be having those conversations, right? But many of us avoid them. And I know I've coached so many folks who are avoiding that discussion. Sometimes my kids, I help coach them avoid that discussion. They want to have it, but they don't know how to have it. So if you were to leave our audience with one really good nugget as to how we can bridge that gap between knowing that they should have those conversations and actually doing the Nike thing, just doing it.
So I would say, examine your own belief system. Do you believe sharing is caring? Do you believe that coaching actually can transform people? That's when you'll be ready to do the hard work of leadership. I mean, that's why you signed up for this role. I had a mentor of mine, and this was over 20 years ago, Stephen, and I'm going in for my performance review. I'm the VP of sales, and I'm thinking, easy peasy, we've had a great year. And this gentleman is still a mentor to me today, Klein. So he started out by saying, Colleen, I never doubt your work ethic. You're the first in, last out. And then, however, something has to change. You come into this office, you don't look left or right. I'm not even sure if you're saying hi to your assistant anymore. It's got to change. I was like appalled, angry. I'm like, I'm giving my blood for this company. Guess what I'm talking about 20 some years later? His feedback made me sit back and recognize I was getting so task-oriented that I was forgetting the people side of the business. That was a gift, and that's why I feel so strongly about it, because it was a turning point for me. And you can believe after that, I was watching my hurried and harried approach, which I still see with a lot of people. And you can't be hurried and harried when you're giving feedback. How about you?
First of all, it's very sage advice. And if anyone I know who interacts before they get to business, it's you. Whatever that advice you got some 20 odd years ago when you were 10, it really paid off.
It's compounding. It's a gift that keeps coming.
It's like compound interest.
Exactly.
So from my perspective, if I were to share one thing, it's a simplistic view, but there is a direct correlation. If this is an important discussion that we want to help someone get better on our team, taking the time to think it through, to prepare what you want to say, how you want to say it. If you have a coach, if you have a colleague, you can role play it through and see how it sounds. You're going to get much better results. It's going to come off smoother. You're going to be more confident in delivering it. If anything we do, and I know everyone's busy and we're rushing from one meeting to the next, but we know we're having an important meeting with someone, that taking some time to put some notes down, to think what the other may say or how they're feeling before, really meant more powerful discussion. And I think the individual can see that. So if you really want to influence and have those conversations and have them with confidence, to me, the key is preparing, re-preparing, role-playing, practicing it out, because practice makes perfect.
It does. I had to learn that, Stephen, where I had to have the self-awareness where something I perceived as a difficult conversation, you may not. And that could be going back to your childhood, some past event you had. When I realized I had to rehearse, and I thought it was the craziest thing. But then I realized I could be saying the right words, but my facial expression was off. My tonality was terse. I'm with you.
Maybe I'll just share a quick story here. When I was a sales manager, it goes back a few years, I had a rep, and I won't mention his name because he may be watching, but every year he thought he should have won the Sales Rep of the Year award.
Okay.
He was a nice guy, worked hard, but very pig-headed.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't listen. I would know going in for his performance reviews that there'd be resistance, and we go on forever because sometimes those hour meetings become 2 hour meetings.
Yes. Yes.
So I remember part of it sometimes is you just got to call a stop to those meetings because you're not getting anywhere with the individual. How I used to end that, and people find it funny because I just thought of it now, it's a long time ago, but I used to say, go ask your wife if what I'm saying is valid. And almost like clockwork, call me the next morning and say, yes, I spoke to my wife and you're right on. I'm sorry. And that was like, oh, it's desperation. You're not listening. And every year it was the same thing. I think I managed them for like 3 years. And
yes.
Anyway.
It's the go ask your wife technique.
That's my insight is one, come to the table prepared.
Absolutely. So we hope everyone has enjoyed our conversation today and not only enjoyed it, but learned some tips and tools for holding those difficult conversations, because when you step up to leadership, you're definitely going to have a few of them. Even if you're managing and leading a really good team, a really good person, because we're managing human beings. So thanks everyone for joining us.
Thank you. It was a great session.